5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
First off, I just like to say, fuck Vince McMahon. We had this show all done, ready, and wrapped up for me to edit and put up early today. But see, what had happened was Vince McMahon decided that the little allegations that we had talked about yesterday were a little bit too hot. So we're recording just after he said not a goddamn thing on Friday Night SmackDown. This is Pierce at Cameron Santo, joined by Rob and Chris at Chris M. Novak at Robin Neil 31. You'll hear this show a little bit weird. So we're recording this, and then when we jump back into the show, we'll get into Sasha and everything else and all the other rumor mills that's going on that we're going to try to piece through. And then we get One Night Stand 2006 at the very end. But we're recording this right after he just said nothing on SmackDown. And that's really one of the greatest displays of professional wrestling. You know, we have the news come out earlier today, and then instantly we get the blur of Vince McMahon to speak on Friday Night SmackDown. And it's a big thing. You got fucking Meltzer jumping on Uvu so he could talk on CNN. And then what does Vince McMahon come out and do? Bask in the adulations of the cheers. Get that. Oh yeah, nah, they still fuck with the boy. And then leave.
Yeah. I mean, it's... I didn't really know what to expect. So, like, I'm glad they didn't make it actively worse, I guess. But, like, there's just no reason for that. You probably could just left well enough alone, because now it looks like you just did it to get people to tune in.
Yeah, it's what happened. Really weird situation when you wish that wasn't the way the show started.
Yeah, it's just strange. And, you know, everyone was still on his side and stuff. And it just, you know, it was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, and... You know, the bigger picture stuff with him just stepping down, I don't even know that it's going to really lead to too much in terms of changes, because, you know, it's just going to be basically the same people in charge that he can just, you know, contact. And I think things will still pretty much run through him. I mean, I don't know how many people have watched Succession, but it's basically the same story they did all year and this season, you know, so it's become basically the same thing where it's, you know, a shadow CEO, but you know who's still really in charge.
Yeah, essentially, because what? The board of WWE, who is doing the investigation, acts upon the shareholders. And who's the majority shareholder? Vince McMahon, yeah. McMahon Jr. So it's all just the ploy. I mean, the investigation truly is a ploy. You would hope that they do their due diligence in it, even if Vince has to step aside. But the fact of the matter is, it's still Vince McMahon's company. Vince is still going to run it how he sees fit. Stephanie as the chairwoman, okay, cool. We're finally here at this point. But it's like, voluntarily or not, you're still going to have your hands in on the day-to-day.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, will there maybe be like an added focus on coming up with some sort of retirement plan for the next year or two? Probably. It's probably not the worst idea, even without all this.
In the quicker motion, yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, thinking about it for most of the day and then just seeing SmackDown, like, does nothing really changed?
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see what the investigation finds, I guess. You know, if there are more women or more NDAs or whatever, that could lead to something. But yeah, I mean, it just... It feels kind of like a big waste of time that we kind of had all these speculations all day and it was just that.
Yeah.
Kind of gross to an extent. I didn't, the crowd reaction, you know, I kind of expected it, but, you know, it doesn't make it any better, I don't think. Just, yeah, it's not great.
It's very pro wrestling and, you know, it's hard to know how to feel.
Mm-hmm.
About the entire thing because, you know, of course, with the issue at hand, like, it's very fucking damaging. We don't have to sit here and act like we didn't have an expectation of this kind of level of filth with Vince McMahon, right? I feel like anybody would be nonsensical to sit here and say, oh, you thought Vince was a good, God-fearing man. Bullshit. But, you know, we sit here and, you know, me working in the news cycle, it is a major story that Vince McMahon stepping aside from WWE, whether or not us within wrestling believe that it's not, because we know that he's still going to be able to tinker and shit. But on the outside spectrum, it is very important to see. Now, the whole sham of him talking is one thing. That was what it was. It was absolutely a ploy to get you to watch SmackDown. And guess what? It worked. That's why I say it's one of the greatest displays of professional wrestling, because all he had to do was say, I'm speaking. Knew it right off the bat. But the fact of the matter is, from the outside perspective, you're seeing what you always thought you never would see, right? Because the belief is that Vince McMahon is going to run wrestling until he's dead. And technically, yeah, he will. But now we're seeing the start of the succession plan. I think that is very important to note, is that, like, yo, we're here. We're starting to see Stephanie and whoever is next in line in the chain starting to move forward. The timeline on Vince is now officially dwindling. And whoever's next, whether it be Stephanie, whether it be Triple H, whether it be Nick Khan, because we've been doing the jokes for a while. Now we're going to start seeing that in place. And I think from the outside's perspective, that's very peculiar, because you've never believed of a world where Vince McMahon isn't in charge.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, like I said, I think probably an added focus on getting some sort of retirement plan. But yeah, it, again, this doesn't feel like too much is going to be different in the immediate future.
Definitely not.
All right, let's get back to your regular schedule programming. We also got coming up on the show. Damn, what else did we talk about? I don't even remember. Let's talk about
Sasha, which has changed a little bit, but not enough that we need to... You don't get back into
it.
No,
we're not getting back. I'm tossing to everything. I'm trying to wrap. It's called a wrap. We're done. We're tired. It's Friday. We're done. Enjoy the rest of the show. Let's continue on with the drama and what may be and what may not be. Here's the latest. Regarding Sasha Banks, who walked out a month ago today, exactly, this is June 16th, we're recording, she walked out exactly 1 month today with Naomi. They were indefinitely suspended and then buried on air yesterday, Wednesday night, which I wasn't paying attention to be honest with you. I was completely busy doing other shit. Raj Geary from Wrestling Inc. said he heard that Sasha Banks had been released, but SRS couldn't confirm that with his sources. The latest wrinkle today comes from Matt Men's Andrew Zarian, who says, quote, I cannot confirm that she's released, but I did hear late last week that her attorneys were working on getting this done. In their minds, they could clone Sasha Banks with somebody else and have her fit for that role, and no problem. It is now a role you are playing. It's a role with mid-level actors. When pressed, he says, no, I don't see Sasha Banks going back right now. Again, it's all rumor, it's all hearsay. You're just playing with all the, you know, stuff that's being tweeted out there by quote-unquote wrestling journalists. And I say quote-unquote wrestling journalists because it's very hard to be a wrestling journalist.
Yeah.
Just theoretically, as anyone who has gone through an actual journalism class, you two went to Mizzou, which is the Midwest Stanford for journalism. I went to a school that specifies in broadcast journalism. Trying to do the journalism thing over wrestling kind of doesn't exist. You're just ping-ponging off of rumors and hearsay and what may be or what may not be. Mm-hmm. Of course, we're talking about the employment of a superstar, of an employee here. So that gets incredibly murky. You know, it just feels like, and this goes into the story that we just talked about, right? Because this came out last night. I kind of went over the tea leaves this morning. I'm thinking that's really weird that this comes out and the timing of it and the is she or is she not? That's how I see it. Like, it doesn't look like anything's really changed with either Sasha or Naomi. It's just the timing of this story coming out is just incredibly weird, but.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, if you really, you know, think hard about the timing, you can really run into some issues. I mean, these contracts, we've talked about it. You know, we talked about it in the 2005, 2006 stuff with Brock. They're not really enforceable. Like, if you really want to fight it hard enough, you'll probably get your way. So if she does go through lawyers and stuff, it'll probably work out for her. You know, and she's... obviously big enough deal where she'd want to do that if she truly feels like this is the end of the line. She has the resources, obviously. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with this. Like, I thought she'd probably come back. Now it doesn't seem like she will. I don't know that it's necessarily, you know, she's going to get a release and immediately go to AEW like some people are thinking. She might actually go and try act, you know, might go try acting. It's interesting. Like, I don't know what the resolution is going to be here. I thought they just kind of smooth things over and eventually she'd come back, but it seems like there's a lot of genuine issues this time.
Look, there's always been genuine issues.
Well, yeah, no.
Okay, so my whole entire thought this entire time when Naomi and Sasha walked out is there is no way, and there was no way, that situation in a vacuum would lead to a walkout, and now one of the two that we know of, at least, is allegedly trying to break out of their contract.
Yeah.
This has been something that has clearly been brewing for years and years now. I mean, we're almost a decade removed from when she first came up. 2015, it's going to be 7 years next month.
Mm-hmm.
And her 2016 was six. That whole fall, obviously, was a huge blessing for her, as much as it might have been a curse in a way, just because it seems like nothing's been the same since.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a lot of things that we probably don't know about that have happened that have led to this point. Because, again, there's no way that this situation could have resulted in this. This has clearly been a long-term thing that has been either enabled or ignored and thought to say, okay, we'll get over it eventually. No, eventually, if you keep ignoring a problem, it's going to become a bigger one, and you can't keep, you know, throwing it under the bed or under the rug or whatever the hell. Like, you can't let this happen. And I think it's especially just damning of the entire situation, remember, that it's just happening to somebody who is as genuine as a big deal as Sasha is. Like, it can't be understated what her impact on women's wrestling is. She's a visible face. She has been for years and years now. I mean, she has, and she, again, she's a legitimate ratings getter for that. Yeah. They don't grow on trees. You always have to try and make a resolution. I guess if, you know, I don't know the situation. If Sasha as the party has been unreasonable, whatever. I guess if you think that it's worth the loss or whatever, fine. And, you know, to fair play them, like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen here, but is she really going to go over there?
Well,
what would she do over there? First of all, that would require them to completely overhaul their entire television program. Because I don't think she's going to go over there just to have the one segment at 9:20 p.m. Eastern time every single week.
No, I agree, but I mean,
and is she? What are they going to pay her? And then how is that going to impact everyone else around her? Because I mean, if she's making that much money while, you know, the others aren't, I just don't see philosophically how that would ever work. So I think if she does go, she will probably just be more private, do some Hollywood stuff maybe if that interests her, and just, you know, do what she has to do. I can't see. I will legitimately believe it when I see it when it comes to that aspect. Right now, I think that this is unfortunate. If she does eventually get released, I don't know what a post Sasha Banks WWE looks like, but if they are just, you know, I hope they don't whitewash her, because that would be stupid. But they've been pettier, I guess. I think it's all just unfortunate, because this never needed to be this way. But if you, again, ignore a problem, it's just going to eventually blow up in your face. And this is what we've been probably building towards for years and years.
Well, yeah, it's particularly, you know, upsetting that it happened how and when it did, because, you know, she agreed to play ball and do the tag title thing again.
I mean,
you know,
we don't know what she agreed to play ball.
She did it,
but, like, I'm just saying, like, we don't know what the internal
reluctantly.
Discussion. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you don't know.
Yeah, we really don't know shit.
We have no fucking clue.
We don't know shit. That's kind of the end point of it.
Especially considering... He said that, you know, they were both promised WrestleMania matches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that could have probably been Sasha and Tony and probably Naomi and Sonya.
Right. Let's keep going. More bad news. Fightful Select is reporting that WWE fears that Randy Orton will be sidelined for the rest of 2022 with a back injury. They say that his injury has gotten progressively worse, and the company is afraid that he may need to undergo surgery. This sucks, because we all penciled in Randy for SummerSlam against Roman Reigns, and we're at a point where it doesn't look like Roman Reigns is going to be working a lot, maybe for the rest of the year. It sucks, but of course it sucks for Randy, because Randy has really been, the last like 2 years for Randy have been borderline excellent.
Yeah, no, it's really unfortunate. I think we're all really looking forward to Roman and Randy. I think, you know, Roman will get a replacement SummerSlam match. It'll be, you know, Drew or Lashley or whatever. Got to heat Lashley up a little bit, or Seth, you know, run that back, whatever. But yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, Randy's been very good. You know, losing Randy and Cody back to back is not ideal. You know, you could argue that it's their fault for getting rid of so many mid-card people, not having anyone to kind of fill their places. But either way, it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, the product takes a hit when guys get hurt. You know, you see it with AEW and CM Punk right now. You see it with, you know, you're seeing it how it is now. It's missing something. And, you know, I didn't expect Randy to have to miss the rest of the year. I hope that's not true. But yeah, it's a bummer. And I probably will not end up going to SummerSlam now, because that was one of the matches that I really wanted to see. But we'll see what the rest of the card is.
Orton could have been hurt, and that match could have never even happened. So I don't personally, I know it's a possibility, but I don't see how that would impact someone going.
I mean, honestly, I don't want to go. If I thought about going to SummerSlam, this would have been the killer for me, because, like, well, what the fuck am I going to go for now?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's kind of a wild
look. Yeah.
But between, you know, Cody being hurt and this, like, it's two of the guys that actually really care about watching and, you know.
Reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think when it comes to Orton, I think it sucks, but if because it's a back injury, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if his back is bothering him, that is a very concerning thing, and I would hope that about him wrapping up or anything like that after this, or working significantly even less. I think over the past 2 years or so, he's been putting in great, tremendous work, and it would be a bummer if it came back, but hopefully he will be back before the end of the calendar year, even though that is what they are fearing that he will not be. So we will see. Best wishes to him, and hopefully he recovers fully.
Yeah. We're going to see Elias back next Monday. I'm so excited to see Elias for the first time in almost a year. It's great. It's going to be really great storytelling. Alexa Bliss and Liv Morgan are going to Money in the Bank. Good on them. Let's go back to more sad news and go across companies over to AEW, because Jeff Hardy has been arrested on multiple charges. He's booked in Florida on 3 charges, including felony DUI, dashboard cam caught him looking fucked. His blood alcohol tests both came back above a 0.2. Illegal limit in Florida, 0.08. Mm-hmm. It's just upsetting. Again, for Jeff to be dealing with his problems, and it's not about like I'm upset that Jeff continuously does this to himself. It's because that's what happens with addiction. Like, you can't really blame the person going through it, but you blame the surroundings. You blame how folks react to it. And a couple months ago, when WWE tried to help, when he was, whatever happened to him at the show and he had to leave, when WWE tried to help and they didn't, he didn't want to help, that's fine. But you can't be mad at the company for having to let him go because he refused to help. Because what the fuck else are you going to do? Now we're at a situation where he goes to AEW, and we've seen the matches that he's been put through. Like, he hasn't looked good. He hasn't been doing, spots perfectly. And it's because his body can't fucking hold up anymore. He's, 46 maybe? Still trying to do the shit he was doing when he was 23, 24? What do you think he's going to be doing?
30 years or whatever. Like, he started with WWF in,
when he was like 17.
Yeah. He was too young to even be there. And he was there. Yeah.
Like, but his body's been through all of that and is still going through all that, whether it be because he's being prodded by people or because he continues to love the rush of the fans, that Ric Flair syndrome, whatever. What the fuck else do you think he's going to do to cope with that? And I want to say it's negligence on AEW's part for not playing it safe with him, because they haven't. But it's also on fans for just trying to make a fucking company wars out of this shit, out of a person in the life that they're living. Like, this shit's hard, man. Addiction's fucking hard. And you can't respond to someone one way or another for how they're responding to it. Like, it's only so many people can do. That's a fact of the fucking matter. Because at the end of the day, that person has to want to get help. But you treat everyone with care, because that's all you can do. And I feel like some people haven't treated Jeff Hardy with the necessary care that he needs to beat this shit or get through it.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, even now, he's going to rehab and all that, but the statement was like, oh, that's when he can come back to wrestling. And that's really not what it should be about.
He doesn't fucking need wrestling.
Yeah, that shouldn't be and I get, he likes doing it or whatever, but you got a wife and kids, man. You got to focus on that.
It's hard to just look someone in the eye and just tell them what the fuck they need, because you don't want to, meddle in people's business and all that stuff. But sometimes people need to hear the hard fucking truth, and the hard fucking truth that Jeff Hardy needs to hear, that the people that Jeff Hardy loves and the people that love Jeff Hardy need him to hear, is you do not need wrestling right now. You need to go home, be with your family, find solace in the things that you love. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, legally, he's going to probably be in some trouble as well. So he's going to have to deal with that when that comes. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not a good situation. And I really hope everything works out for him. You know, I know he's been through the process before and, you know, it's not linear. Just hopefully it works.
Yeah, I mean, you guys did everything possible. So be productive for the conversation.
Let's end right now on some positive notes. Our boy Biggie had his neck brace removed. It was a good sign to see him in the chair getting a cut. I loved it. I'm so happy that now we can move to the next stage of the healing process and eventually his return.
Yeah, it's really good to see. You know, hopefully he's back for the Rumble. I've talked about that. That'd be a really cool surprise return. Yeah, I mean, it's good. I don't know, you know, he still obviously has a lot of work to do, but getting the brace off, that's a step in the right direction. And again, he's been positive about it and upbeat, and that goes a long way.
It definitely does. It'd be good to see him back.
One more thing that I did forget. By the way, I don't know who the fuck Troy Donovan is, so what was that?
He was with Tony D'Angelo. Yeah,
Tony D'Angelo, he was released for a policy issue. It hasn't been revealed. There was speculation, unverified, that he may have said his age wasn't actually his age.
Oh.
They reversed Marty Wright, from what I was told.
No. Well,
but again, that's unverified and whatnot.
Okay. Yeah, and I don't know who he is, so I kind of don't care. But I also forgot that Paige's contract is coming to an end. WWE, according to Paige, had no interest in renewing, which, you know, you can understand if she's not going to wrestle or they're not going to clear her to wrestle. What's next for Saraya Bevis, as she will soon once again be known as full-time?
Yeah, I don't know if she's going to try and go to AEW and get cleared. I mean, you know, she'd be an asset to them, I think. Good. I mean, you know, it just, I just hope, you know, she does whatever's best for her. You know, I talked about it before, how I don't want to police the safety of the wrestlers and stuff. And if you get cleared, and you know, good for you, but you know, you are taking a risk too, but you know, whatever makes you happy, I guess.
Where is she going to be an asset?
Manager, you know, in the ring, depending
on.
She's definitely going to wrestle.
She's definitely going to try and wrestle, but they only have one wrestling match a week. What does it matter?
Yeah,
I understand you from that point, but Paige, like, walks in and she's immediately what, top three most popular superstars?
Yeah, behind, that
with,
too.
With Jade and,
I mean, with, but like,
woman here.
Are we sure that crowd would take to her?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. I only don't know because she's been so out of the space for so long that is she significant enough?
I think AEW will find a way to play up her history, her family history. They're gonna make a big deal out of that. They're gonna make a big deal that she's wrestling for the first time in God knows how long because she hasn't been cleared and fought her way back. And they're really gonna milk that, you know, for her as the baby face. Like, for me, it's not a question of like whether she's gonna get over with that crowd, because I've seen some shit women get over with that crowd. No offense, but Paige is gonna be fine. It's just a matter of, like, health-wise, is she going to be able to hold up? And then also, are you going to give the ladies more time to shine on TV? It's honestly wild that they don't have 3 hours for Dynamite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I know they're, you know, kind of reluctant to do it, but if you're not going to do 3 hours for Dynamite, just do 2 hours for Rampage.
Yeah, but then the problem you run into is it's ending at, you know, 11 o'clock Eastern or whatever. So you'd have to either start an hour earlier and then go against SmackDown.
You know.
Actually, be ending at midnight.
Friday Night War, I feel like, is a little bit more winnable than a Monday Night War. I'm not saying that they're going to get the numbers. Of course not, because, like, they don't get the numbers right now. And it's taped. But, like, who cares? Yeah. Also, like, because you're on cable, you have the benefit of just going on at 9 or what? Wait, it'd be 10 o'clock Eastern time zone. Let's say they went on at 9. and they go from 9-11 Eastern time, you also can go at 6. Like, you just, let's just say you do that. Like, I don't know. Because you go on at 6 Pacific, you're off by 8, and then people can just flip to SmackDown. And I feel like if you're really a big AEW fan on the East Coast or in the Central Time Zone, you're not going to give a shit about SmackDown. You're probably just going to flip over. Or you're like a smart person. You have a DVR.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's how I look at it. Let's go back in time to the year 2006 because we're going to get extreme.
Yes, we have a lot to do. We didn't get to talk about One Night Stand last time, but we're getting through One Night Stand. And then next week we start a third promotion here. So, which I have no idea how that's going to be because I really don't. I remember the sci-fi stuff and then like a couple matches, but I don't remember most of ECW. So,
yeah, I mean, I stopped watching ECW when Punk left. So.
Okay.
Once he moved over to Raw, I kind of just petered out. But like those first couple years were really, really bad because they tried to be quote unquote ECW, but then you had things like the Zombie, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But then you also, I think we talked about the show that they did at Hammerstein, where they had Big Show and Batista. For some fucking reason, they had Big Show and Batista main eventing. So it was blunder after blunder. And of course, should have never brought it back in the first place if it wasn't going to be ECW. Hell, you could have named that third brand anything. Literally anything. And it would have instantly been better. But you put the ECW stink on it.
Yeah, and I mean, we'll talk about this a little bit because I have the, you know, official ECW roster we're going to be looking at going into it. And it's they don't have enough for a third brand in general. They so, really but yeah, so starting with the top five songs, everything kind of stayed the same for the most part. Where'd You Go? Still at 5. Temperatures at 4. SOS down to 3. Bad Day is down to 2. And the new number one song is Riding by Chamillionaire, which should stay there for a few weeks, I imagine.
Song, man.
Everywhere in 2006.
Give this, give Crazy Bone the respect that he deserves for lacing that shit. Because that was a hit.
For the movies, Poseidon drops to 5. Mission Impossible 3 drops to 4. Over the Hedge drops to 3. Da Vinci Code drops 2. And X-Men The Last Stand debuts at number 1.
Yeah.
Those were fine.
The Last Stand was not fine.
No, that one was
terrible.
That's fair.
It's a good thing they retconned everything from The Last Stand when they did Days of Future Past. Because granted, it's not even the worst Dark Phoenix story that Fox has done, which is crazy.
Yeah.
But still a bad movie. Yeah. Shitty, man.
Okay. Let's see. We got Raw, May 29th, 2006 from the Tacoma Dome. It's Memorial Day, so we get the Memorial Day video to kick off the show. And then we got a new signature, which I did not realize was this week. And it's basically still the signature they use today for the most part. Change a little bit, but yeah. Vince said into the ring to open the show. You know, Triple H had a job to do last week on Shawn Michaels, but instead Triple H defined him. And I'll get to that in a minute. Shawn Michaels. Once he's all healed up from last week and come back and be part of the ring crew, Triple H is facing Kenny tonight, and Vince has a new executive assistant, and it's Coach. Coach runs down some of the matches for tonight, and we start with Shelton Benjamin against Kane for the Intercontinental title. Kane hits a choke slam, and the lights go out, and the voice comes over the speakers, and his old music hits, and someone dressed as Kane from when he debuted comes out, and the match just kind of gets thrown away. Luke Gallows, by the way. It's fun. I mean, it's not a good angle, but Coach is asking people backstage where Triple H is. You know, no one has seen him. Viscera says that he wants to face Umaga tonight, and Coach says that that's fine, he can do that. Triple H comes into Vince's office, said he did what he had to do last week, and he'd do it again. Vince says he understands, and Triple H against Kenny is going to be a lumberjack match tonight, but it's just going to be Spirit Squad members.
Yep, we moved on to Umaga versus Viscera. Umaga attacked him during his entrance and then just kind of beat him up for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, there was a tag match between Tori and Beth. Victoria and Candace. Solid showcase for Beth Phoenix. Beth got the win as Mickey looked on from ringside. And Jerry Lawler riled up the crowd about ECW during the break, and then RVD came out and decided that he'll be on commentary for John Cena's match against new Raw superstar Johnny Nitro, who's accompanied by fellow new Raw superstar Melina. They moved to Raw after they got fired on SmackDown.
Yes.
And, you know, this was a solid back and forth. Cena eventually made Johnny Nitro tap out. He pushed Nitro into RVD and knocked RVD over after a stare down.
Also, not the last time we'll see this match.
When this all happened, and of course, like, we're going back, and they didn't do the draft this year, it just really confused me why they just didn't fucking do it. And I know, like, of course, the draft is the quote-unquote ECW. Just when have you picked, two stars from Raw, two stars from SmackDown, I want to say?
Yeah.
Or one star from Raw, one star from SmackDown. And it wound up being the shitty stars anyway. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. And just, I mean, like,
just move folks between Raw and SmackDown because they both needed facelifts at the time. And you kind of mini did one, but, you know.
Yeah, they just kind of moved people and didn't explain why they did it.
You just flipped Nitro, Melina, and Randy, basically. Randy goes back to Raw later. It's like it.
And SmackDown gets, like, Ashley and, that's about it. I mean, they get Kennedy and Batista back, but, like, anyone from Raw, really. Back, and Paul Heyman and Mick Foley are in the ring. Mick says that Paul called him a prostitute last week, and Paul is not wrong. Everyone does things they don't want to do to get to the top. It's wrestling. It's not principled men taking a stand. Only difference between ECW Foley and current Foley is that he went from a low-life pimp like Paul Heyman to a million-dollar pimp like Vince. Did not age great. What bothers Mick is that Paul's assembling another one-night stand pay-per-view, and Mick's facing Terry Funk and Tommy Dreamer, who think that they know hardcore, unlike Mick, who actually does. You know, he had the match with Edge at WrestleMania. Paul says that Mick's comments would mean more if he didn't spend his whole career being a Terry Funk ripoff. Mick says the ECW guys don't have the guts to do what he did, and Paul says that all Mick did was put a sock on his hand to make Vince laugh, and prior to that, he had no opportunities. One night stand, Mick and Edge are going to experience firsthand that ECW is going to be back full time. It's open season. Anyone on Raw or SmackDown who wants to jump to ECW is able to. And Mick assumes his first pick will be Rob Van Dam, which is correct. But the next pick is SmackDown superstar, and it's Kurt Angle. So Kurt and Mick come out and brawl for a little bit before we go to commercial. Really like their interactions. Wish they would have had a match at some point. They did TNA in 2009. I'm not going to watch that, but, you know, good stuff.
Very much so. We got Edge versus Big Show. Edge brought a chair, and the ref went to take it away. Lita hit a low blow on Big Show, and then as the ref was getting Lita out, Edge got the chair back, hit Big Show with it, and hit the spear for the win. A bit too much there, but whatever.
Yeah.
Vince wished Triple H luck and confiscated the sledgehammer. Triple H then faced Kenny in the spear jack match. Triple H eventually got the win. Found another sledgehammer to send them running. Vince said that Triple H will join his Kiss My Ass Club next week on Raw.
Yeah. And listen, the Spirit Squad don't need to be in the main event every week. They did. I know they're, I guess, the top heels on the show now, but, like, they do the same thing. Just, it's annoying. We move on to SmackDown. June 2nd, 2006 from Portland. We open with The Miz, who's the host of Friday Night SmackDown now. Kind of runs down the card a little bit.
Yes. We start. This footage would later be used in Miz's Hate Me Now video package at WrestleMania
27. Oh, yeah. That's right. Yes. We start off with Kurt Angle's farewell to SmackDown. He's facing Rey Mysterio, who arguably his best opponent on SmackDown the past few years. And it actually does become Kurt's farewell to SmackDown because he has one more match on SmackDown, and it's against AJ Styles in 2019.
Yes, correct.
Paul Heyman's on commentary for this one. Kurt's made an open challenge for one night stand to any man from any ring, four-sided, six-sided, or eight-sided. So they kind of played up that it might not be someone from WWE, and then it was anyway. Really good match. We also learned that Ray's putting the title on the line at One Night Stand against Sabu. Kurt hits an angle slam, but Ray gets his foot on the rope. this really good finishing stretch with a counter and do some finishers. And Kurt hits Ray with a belly-to-belly suplex over the top rope, and Ray can't get back to the ring by the count of 10. A lot of count-out finishes these next couple weeks here, mm-hmm. which is interesting. But, yeah, I mean, good enough match. You know, Ray could really use a big win. He is unable to get them, yeah. but, you know. We get a video. Batista's back in 35 days, so it'll be right around Great American Bash where he returns.
Yes. Nunzio told a crew member to ask for that if he sees the video, to tell him to come to Nunzio's corner for his match with Matt Hardy. Matt got the win. Vito came out in a dress.
Yeah, Nunzio not supportive of that.
Yes. They did Piper's Pit with the Great Kali. Javari and get his ass kicked. Was not the best screaming episode of Piper's Pit.
Yeah, it wasn't great. Yeah, like I said, you know, Ashley's on SmackDown now. Michelle McCool is also on SmackDown and is a teacher.
Yes, and soon we'll see her pets.
Yes, including Damian Sandow.
Yes.
Who a lot of people want to play Elias on Monday.
That should happen.
That would be very funny. I'm not going to lie.
Very funny.
Jillian B. Crystal was fun. Mark Henry destroyed Paul Burchill. Yeah, again, they probably shouldn't have made Kurt and Ray lead off the show because everything else just kind of...
Yeah.
Mr. Kennedy's back next week, so it'll be fun. Finlay squashed the jobber. The leprechaun attacked the jobber after the match again. Taz would like to have a match at One Night Stand. He'd like to face Jerry the King Lawler. So we'll see if Jerry Lawler accepts his challenge.
Yes.
Then it's time for the main event already. Booker T against Bobby Lashley. Lashley gets the win. Then after the match, Regal and Booker and Finlay beat him up and make him kiss Booker's foot. So,
it's a fun match.
Yeah, it was good. That was the end of week one.
Yes.
Let's see. So we got the music again here. SOS is down to 5. Where'd You Go is in the top 5 up to number 4. Promiscuous debuting at number 3, Bad Day stays at number 2, and Riding is number 1. That's a really strong top 5. Those are all very good songs.
Yeah, Promiscuous. God, Promiscuous is such a good summer hit. That was really when that became musically just a hot summer, because Promiscuous drops, and then in a little bit we're going to get Sexy Back, and Sexy Back will just take over the entire fucking airwaves, and then My Love will take over the airwaves, and then you just get a lot of really good poppy erotic songs. Let's just say that it just becomes a really good summer for pop music.
Yeah. For the movies, debuting at number 5 is The Omen. Da Vinci Code is down to 4. Over the Hedge stays at 3. X-Men is down to number 2. And debuting at number 1 is The Breakup.
Oh, is that Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I ever saw that.
It was okay. It was, I think, mostly filmed in Chicago.
So yeah, I remember that. Because I remember them making a big deal out of Vince Vaughn and Jennifer Aniston. And A, dating, and then B, shooting the movie at a Cubs game. Oh, no, it was a Blackhawks game, right?
Yeah.
Because Kevin James is in that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They saw that at the Blackhawks, which was back when the Blackhawks were fucking terrible.
Oh, yeah.
Why would you take your date to go see Eric Daze?
Yeah, so move on to Raw. June 5th, 2006, from Pittsburgh, the Igloo. Still a couple more years of shows at the Igloo.
Mm-hmm.
Shane McMahon and Triple H are here to start the night. Shane knows that the sledgehammer was an accident, and you know, if Triple H doesn't want to join the Kiss My Ass Club, they should go work things out. We do the intro, and then we come back. We're kicking things off with RVD and Cena signing their contract. Coach and Paul Heyman are in the ring, as well as Cena and RVD. RVD signs first, as 6 days, the title's going to be around in RVD's waist, and he's keeping it in ECW. He said he hopes John's ready, because the crowd's going to rip him apart on Sunday. Heyman says Cena will never face a crowd like that. They're going to be all against him. And John says, you know, he's an ECW fan. He respects them. He's ready for Sunday, but he's not going to go down easy. It's going to be a fight. They both sign the contract, shake hands, and Paul says that John's first taste of ECW doesn't have to wait till Sunday. It can come Wednesday, WWE versus ECW head-to-head. But Paul brought some ECW guys here tonight. So we get Dreamer and Sandman and Terry Funk and Balls Mahoney coming in through the crowd, and Cena starts to fight them all. And then Sabu comes out, does a leg drop with the chair. And,
very poorly.
Yeah. And the WWE guys come and chase him away. So,
you know, the Cena promo itself is one of his better ones. I think he rose to the occasion here. I'm gonna say that a lot of times, I think, going forward on this run, because he's about to enter a Herculean mode as he continues on here. He doesn't, obviously, you know, there's a break between the time that he holds the title, but there's no question where his positioning is. I feel like this run, this watch through, is going to give me a newer and deeper appreciation for John Cena, top babyface in the WWE.
Yes. We get Carlito against Shelton Benjamin. Carlito gets a pin clean after a backstabber, so he's probably going to get another Intercontinental title shot soon.
Yes.
Triple H goes into Vince's office. Vince isn't there at first, so Triple H looks at the picture of Sean having to join the Kiss My Ass Club, and then Vince comes in. Triple H says he's not doing that tonight, and Vince says if Triple H doesn't do it, the entire locker room can do it, or if Triple H can beat Big Show, he will be out of the match. So we move into Triple H against Big Show. Triple H throws him over the top rope like a minute into the match, and the Spirit Squad come down and attack Big Show. So Triple H loses by disqualification. It's a good finish.
Yeah, that's a good finish. That is definitely a good finish. Triple H went into Vince's office and got mad at him and said that he's not kissing his ass tonight. But Vince said that if he doesn't, he will never challenge for another championship.
Again, they're doing a really good job with the Triple H face turn. I don't know how the DX stuff is going to play, but the face turn's been good.
Yes.
It's been a very slow, gradual, like, hey, I'm the same Triple H. I'm just, you know, this man's fucking me. I ain't gonna take
it
anymore kind of deal. Like, it's mm-hmm. done very good.
Well, and I was thinking about it last night. Like, they both started doing the crotch chops at, like, WrestleMania.
Right.
So they've been building to that, too.
Right. Slowly but surely. I remember watching that WrestleMania and instantly just like, are they being back there? Because they wouldn't have done that if they weren't going to bring back DX. And it just seemed, eventual once that happened. And then the slow progression of Triple H started to turn and it just became an inevitability. But like I said, like they've slowly been doing Triple H very well.
Yeah. So we get Eugene against Matt Stryker. Eugene says it's going to be different this week because he has a tutor, and it's Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And Eugene gets the win with the 3-point stance and tackle. And then Umaga comes out and beats up Eugene and Hacksaw Jim Duggan. So Umaga's just running through people again.
And then he doesn't leave Hacksaw.
No, he's going to be here for like 2 years.
Yeah.
Because I was watching the thing where Vince's limo blows up and he's backstage.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he's around for a minute, and him and Eugene become tag champs.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It's wow.
Yeah. So, moving forward here after the break, Kurt Angle came out. He said nothing was going to stop him from coming back to his hometown of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Before he went on, Foley and Edge came out. Kurt said that everything Ric Flair said about Mick Foley was true. Mick said that he heard about Kurt's open challenge and was interested in it. Kurt said that after Mick and Edge lose in the tag match, Mick should accept the open challenge so Kurt can beat him. Before he answers, however, Edge came out, said that Kurt is like the Pittsburgh Steelers against everyone else, but like the Pirates against him. Edge makes fun of Willie Stargell, and Kurt called him a blonde-haired bitch. Edge said that he's the number one contender in vengeance. What does Kurt have? An open challenge at One Night Stand? Who cares? Let's see, they came to blows. Foley got ankle slammed. Kurt put the ankle lock on Edge. Lita pulled him away to safety. And then as he was staring them down, Randy Orton came in and hit the RK for One Night Stand.
There we go.
Then we got Kane versus Lance Cade. Kane and Murdoch are back together as tag team. The Mask came on screen again and said, I'm waiting, come to the back. Kane went to the back, and then Big Kane beat him up.
Yeah. We get a vignette. The Highlanders are coming. We'll be here shortly. They're fun, right? And they're a good team. They're entertaining.
Yes.
We go back. Johnny Nitro is in action against Charlie Haas. Charlie's making his entrance and running off the ropes and bounces Lillian Garcia off the ropes to the floor. And she is injured and screaming for most of the match. And Nitro wins with a roll-up after Melina faked an injury and drew Charlie Haas' attention. So, yeah, not great for Lillian.
Not great for Lillian, but it did lead to a storyline because WWE.
Beth Phoenix in action against Victoria gets the win with the Glam Slam. They're really trying to hype her up because she's probably going to be challenging for the title, I would imagine. Jerry Lawler rants about Taz for a little bit and basically agrees to wrestle him at One Night Stand. Triple H is getting ready to go out when Shane comes in. Triple H is mad that he has to go do this, and Shane tells him, you know, it'll be fine, just take it easy. Triple H's back is turned, and Shane drugs Triple H's water bottle. He takes a sip of it and realizes it's drugged, and then Shane turns his back, and Triple H switches the water bottles.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Because naturally, Triple H knows what that taste is like. As someone who's drugged a McMahon before.
Yeah, I think, you know, between that and them doing the same thing to Sean, like, it's not hard to draw that conclusion that he learned from all this stuff. So, yeah, good stuff.
Exactly.
Look at those DX hijinks.
Yes. So Vince came out, started discussing people who were in the Kiss My Ass Club. So Triple H needs to join because he has to be a locker room leader. Came out, Vince started talking to him, and then he collapsed. So Vince pulled his pants down and has Shane set him up. And then Shane also collapses, and Triple H stands up and pedigrees Vince.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens next week.
Yes, indeed. Indeed we will.
I don't know if either of you watched the WWE versus ECW thing. It is on Peacock. I just go over the highlights of it real quick.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's in the WWE ECW section. It's technically the first episode, so
okay.
I just watched it real quick. RVD and Rey Mysterio had a pretty good match. Rey lost, of course, but, you know, it's just kind of what he does.
The champion losing.
Yeah.
To the non-champ.
Kurt Angle was there
not
and
a
had
fuck
a
finish, not a...
Yeah, it whatever. Just it doesn't make sense. Like, his whole title reign, people talk about, like, oh, it was bad, and it really kind of is.
We'll talk about it in a hot second. You literally did a no contest on the fucking pay-per-view. Why couldn't you just do that here?
Yeah, exactly. What? Or, I mean, why can't Sabu just lose? Because he doesn't lose against
That's what I'm saying.
We'll talk about that in a minute.
That's what I'm saying. You have this match at a no contest because these two are about to be your champions in a couple of days.
Yeah.
And then just have Rey beat Sabu in a competitive match. Mm-hmm. And let Rey get the respect he... Whatever. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. Kurt and Randy have a promo. Kind of just setting up that match. Mickey wrestled Jazz. Jazz is back.
Yay.
Mickey got the
win. I honestly didn't know Jazz was still with the company. Oh, that's right. That's right. Because she got re-signed for ECW. Mm-hmm. But she was rarely used. So, like, I completely forgot that she had re-signed.
Yeah. Todd Grisham was with John Cena. John said that, you know, he's not worried about Sabu tonight. And he's not really worried about Sunday. He's going to fight his way out. He knows what he has to do. The WWE versus ECW Battle Royal, which is won by Raw's The Big Show, who then takes his shirt off and reveals that he is part of ECW.
Where is the biz? This is the sign. This is the sign of things going downhill.
Yeah.
Before the damn pay-per-view.
He has a match with Hardcore Holly that's very good, which I think we'll watch in a couple weeks. But yeah, it's a strange fit. Then we get Edge against Tommy Dreamer in Extreme Rules match. Dreamer had a trash can full of weapons, started hitting Edge with them and all that. Eventually Terry Funk comes out and goes after Edge and Lita, but Mick Foley takes him out. And then Dreamer does a Death Valley driver through a table, but Lita starts hitting him with a kendo stick and Edge gets up and spears him and gets the win. Foley does another promo like he did a couple years ago where his eyes all messed up and he's got the spotlight on him. It's good stuff. Foley's very good at that. Taz and Jerry Lawler start to brawl. So that's the whole thing. We get to Cena and Sabu. Sabu does a triple jump moonsault and Cena kicks out. And then we don't really get a finish because Sabu's in the STFU and Big Show comes out and attacks Cena in disqualification and they get the WWE versus ECW brawl to end the show. So it's a fun show to check out if you've never seen, but you know, there are some flaws to it too.
Yes.
Yep. It's apropos for anything on sci-fi, keep it real.
Oh, yeah. We move on to SmackDown, June 9th, 2006, from Wheeling, West Virginia. Miz runs down the matches like usual. Finley's facing Rey Mysterio.
Virginia is only a place you know if you play a lot of NCAA football.
Yes. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it's not like, it's not Huntington.
There's a five-star recruit there.
So Finlay's facing Mysterio in the main event tonight. But first, William Regal's here. There's a lot to answer for after, last week. They show a video of it, and Booker's going to come out as well. But Lashley attacks Regal from behind before Booker can come out. Teddy Long says that those two are going to wrestle tonight. And if Lashley beats Regal, he gets a match with Booker next week. Batista's back, 28 days. I think it's right around 4th of July it ends up being. Mm-hmm. Then we move on to Super Crazy against Brian Kendrick. They let him go a little bit. It was a fun match. Good to see Super Crazy get some work. It makes sense why he did when you, stay tuned. Super Crazy also gets a win with the Spanish Fly. Yep. Which was not a move that was being done every week like it is now. After the match, Great Khali comes out and destroys both of them, which doesn't really feel necessary, but, Paul Heyman's made Rey Mysterio an offer to jump to ECW. Is Rey going to do it? We'll have to see. Crystal's with Finlay, who's facing Rey later tonight. Crystal wants to know what the deal is with the Leprechaun, but Finlay just kind of blows that off, wants to talk about Rey Mysterio. Says he doesn't care if Rey jumps to ECW, because tonight Rey is in for the fight of his life. Vito shows up wearing a dress. Nunzio, not happy about it, just not supporting his friend again. Vito wins in a match against Nunzio, though, wearing the dress. Nunzio's going to ECW, so kind of finish this off. And then Vito
What point did that make?
Yeah. Mr. Kennedy's back late.
That was a, hey, Vito's a weirdo. Let's put him on sci-fi.
Yeah. Okay. Not great.
Yeah.
So we get into Lashley against Regal. Booker and Charmel watch a match from the throne on the stage. Regal attacks Lashley during his entrance, and we're underway. And then, good back and forth. And Regal gets knocked out on the floor, can't answer the 10 count, so we get another count-out win. And Lashley's going to face Booker next week.
Good for Lashley.
Yeah.
Yep. Then Mark Henry squashed Raymond Rowe. Of course, he wanted to be in the Viking Raiders and the War Raiders, or whatever you want to call them.
Is he the weird one?
He's the one who's married to Sarah Logan.
So, yes.
I guess so, yeah.
I'm sorry, the bearded one.
The bald one.
The bald one. The bald one is the weird one?
I think so, because they had
Is he like QAnon?
No, I think it was more COVID stuff.
Oh, okay. Oh, and, yeah, where Sarah Logan's kind of weird, so.
And how, you shouldn't eat anything that's not just meat.
Yeah.
They're with those people.
Oh, yeah. Veggies aren't good for you. You gotta be able to.
Mark Henry says he's going to do that exact same thing to Batista when he comes back. So unfinished business there.
Yeah.
Mr. Kennedy's back against Scotty Tuhati. He gets a quick win. He does a Swanton bomb looking thing now as his finish instead of
Kenton bomb. They call it.
It's fine. It's good to have him back. I guess. Yeah. SmackDown needs him.
Yeah.
Ray's in his locker room, and Chavo asks if he's staying in WWE or going to ECW. Ray says he knows what he's going to do. Chavo says he supports him either way. Ray wants to know if Chavo's ever going to wrestle again. I don't know why he wants to know that. Chavo says probably not. Ray says never say never, and then he should come back. He should not. Actually, his run in a couple of years is pretty good, but takes a while to get there. Michael Cole's in the ring to discuss this Rey Mysterio news and get Ray's answer, but before he does, Taz interrupts and says that he's actually going to be going to ECW to team with Joey Styles. Yep. So SmackDown has a void, a commentator now. Paul Heyman comes out. Congratulates Taz and asks Ray to come out. Ray says that he decided to stay with WWE. Paul says he respects that, but he wishes Ray luck against Finlay because he's going to need it.
Yep, and then Finlay faces Rey Mysterio. Hornswoggle pulled Ray under the ring, but eventually Ray got out and pushed him back under. Went for the 619. Sabu broke it up. Then they hit Ray with the shillelagh for the win. And just to tack on for more good measure, Sabu did a triple jump through a table because Rey Mysterio has to look as weak as possible at all times.
Seriously, you can make your champion look good. I promise you.
Like I said, I didn't know if this was just the internet complaining a little too much or just being weird about it, but this is hard.
Yeah, it sucks.
I do not get the point.
No. He hasn't really had a good match. I mean, and that's not his fault.
He had the right match. I mean, angle match.
Yeah, that was good. He lost that too, though.
Yeah.
You know? They wouldn't do this with Cena.
No.
But I mean, they can.
They got a little too obsessed with the underdog thing without realizing, hey, you can have your underdogs win.
This is also kind of where it started. Like, the big gold belt doesn't matter as much.
100%. Yeah, this is when the big gold belt really starts to be diminished. And if Batista's not hurt, I think they're fine.
Yeah.
Yes.
But once it goes on to Rey, and then it leaves Rey, and I'm saying this like not to shade Booker in his run, but it culminates in SmackDown changing networks. It's really the start of the weirdness with the schedule and when SmackDown's on, and then all of a sudden they're not on the CW. They get kicked off and go to my network, and your champions are changing. You're losing, you know. Yes, you have Edge and Taker and Batista kind of working, but you're kind of already in the lull, right? This is kind of when SmackDown starts to become the true B show.
Yeah.
And had Rey's run been a little bit steadier, had there been a steadier transition from Rey to Booker, had Batista not gotten hurt, maybe the big gold belt still has some relevance, but this is kind of the start of the downfall for it.
Yeah, exactly. We move to One Night Stand 2006.
Let the bodies hit the floor.
June 11th, 2006. I remember, you know, there wasn't as much hype around this one as there was the first one, obviously. You know, this one, everyone was excited that ECW was coming back because it did kind of feel like, hey, this is going to be cool. This is the first time I've ever actually seen the show start to finish, and there are definite warning signs of what's going to go wrong immediately.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman's here to start the show, says that, you know, the Tribe of Extreme has risen again.
Can I say real quick? Yep. This is actually the first time that when I went back and watched it, it was my first time watching it since ECW went down. Because I used to watch this DVD all the time. I would run it back. I actually liked it. Completely different viewpoint of everything. Like, knowing what we know now, knowing like how things started the downfall. So this was a really positive rewatch, I would say.
Yeah. But yeah, Paul Heyman's here to start the show. Says that the Tribe of Extreme has risen again. Heyman says they have a new TV deal. They're better than Raw or SmackDown. They'll be on Sci-Fi every week. All that stuff. Joey Styles, their host for the evening.
Never mind. It was better than TNN, but
still. Yeah. Joey Styles, our host for the evening. Taz will join him later, but Taz has a match first against Jerry the King Lawler. Lawler comes out and slaps Styles before the match, and Styles comes over and jumps on his back, and Lawler was going to do the pile driver, but backed right into the Taz mission. Taz got the win after 30 seconds, kind of popped the crowd, and also Taz, I don't think, could take any bumps. So, it was good, I guess, you know, cool for the crowd.
It was a squash. Yeah, exactly. Taz wasn't able to be on, you know, last year's show, you know, for why ever.
Yeah, he choked Bischoff out at the end, but like...
Right, but like, that was such a small little thing, you know?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, to actually have Taz wrestle on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He did that too. He did
that. Dangle and Taz were tangled up.
Yes. Right, it was the storyline thing. Yeah, but I guess like, if you would have had Taz versus Angle at One Night Stand, like how ill would that have been, right? And I don't know whether or not like it's a matter of he's not cleared or whatever, but they really did have to do something for Taz. It just sucks because it's fucking Jerry Lawler, and it's like it's not Jerry Lawler in 97 where you're invoking like the true feelings of like what was permeating at that time. Like, we know it's a work. We know what we're here for. We know it's just for Taz to choke out the Raw commentator. It's the SmackDown commentator, who's now the ECW commentator, choking out the Raw commentator. Okay, cool, fine. Let's move on.
Yeah. So we move on to Kurt Angle against Randy Orton, and almost immediately the crowd does not love it.
Nope.
It's a little boring for the first half, I'll give them that, but they also never really gave it a chance to really do anything. You know, Randy ends up tapping out to the ankle lock. Kurt's going to be ECW's workhorse now for 2 months. So, but they didn't know that at this time. So
right. Nobody did. So it was ill to have Kurt Angle in ECW because it was like, okay, the wrestling aspect is saved.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's kind of when I knew, like, oh, the crowd's going to be. Because they weren't like the difference between 2005 and 2006. 2005, everyone was just kind of happy to be there.
Right.
Just seeing guys that they haven't seen in a while. And now it's
just the beginning of the disenfranchise.
Yeah.
John Cena and whatnot.
Right.
The
crowd just annoys me.
Yeah. So we move on. We get the full-blooded Italians, which would be Nunzio and Tony Mameluke, against Tajiri, who's back and super crazy. Joey Styles said they don't put the Mexican wrestlers on lawnmowers in ECW, and then the crowd immediately started chanting Nacho Libre.
Different kind of racism over here, pal.
Yeah. FBI pick up the win. It was fun. You know, I liked Jerry and Super Crazy a lot. Then Big Show comes out and just kind of beats everyone up, which.
What else is Big Show going to do?
Yeah.
At an ECW show.
JBL's in a box. He's replacing Taz on SmackDown. They tried to do the promo that they did last year. It was just a lot better last year.
Did not hit, and it was a waste of time.
Yeah.
Because you could have did that on SmackDown instead, where he's going to be, and just reveal him as the new guy on SmackDown. It was a waste.
Yeah, and after that promo, it's like I realize that they're trying to capture what they had last year without really, I think, realizing what made last year special.
And how organic last year was. And it was really, really, really poor how everything came off. I can't believe I liked this movie as much as I did.
Yeah.
Like, it's so fake and it's so bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's not good.
So we move on to Sabu against Rey Mysterio for the World Heavyweight Championship. Crowd, once again, just like last year, does not like Rey very much. You know, Sabu puts Rey on the table to do the moonsault, but Rey rolls off and Sabu just kind of stops. It was kind of awkward. Rey did the seated senton through the table on Sabu, and then Sabu's going for the moonsault through the table again. Instead, kind of stops short, and Rey gets DDT'd through the table instead, and the doctor comes down and says neither guy can continue. So, yeah, it's no contest. I don't really get it, you know?
No. Crowd hated it, too.
Yes.
Because why would you give us that match and there's no finish? You have a, nothing about that called for a DQ or for a no contest. And it was just,
that's Sabu.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's going to face Cena at Vengeance.
Still, don't fucking have him.
Yeah. Here's the thing. At this moment in time, they don't know that he's facing Cena at Vengeance because Edge is supposed to face, you know, RVD. It would be, allegedly.
No. Not allegedly, well, he is.
Yeah, Edge is supposed to face RVD.
Yeah.
So I guess they have to keep Sabu pretty strong, but, like, also, why? I mean.
None of it made sense, man.
We move on to what is pretty clearly the match of the night. Mick Foley and Edge against Tommy Dreamer and Terry Funk. Mick apologized how he's been acting, wants to give ECW credit, especially when they were led by creative genius Stephanie McMahon.
that's a great one.
Yeah, that was awesome. Dreamer and Funk come out with Beulah, who is Tommy Dreamer's wife, and she suggests that they should make it a 6-person intergender match. And Lita,
excellent idea.
Yeah, Lita's down for it, so. We get going. Terry Funk just laying it in there on Mick Foley. Dreamer baseball slides a trash can into Mick's face. Terry Funk sets up a ladder and then takes a bump off the top of it. He's 61 years old. You get the barbed wire board out and drop Tommy Dreamer on it and go to drop it on Funk, but he trips him up and it instead drops right on Mick's head. Mick wraps his arm in barbed wire and rubs it across Terry Funk's head and just busts him wide open, and Terry has to go to the back and get bandaged up a little bit. And they're stalling the time, beating Dreamer down.
Shit, kid, I need a break.
Yeah. Funk comes back with a barbed wire 2x4 and then lights it on fire and hits Mick with it and pushes Mick through the barbed wire board. Beulah and Lita finally fight in the middle of the ring so Joey can call a cat. Right. Yes.
Yeah, it's not really Beulah versus Leilani Kai.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Lita takes the Death Valley Driver from Dreamer.
By the way, sorry, Kimona. Why did I say Leilani Kai?
Oh, yeah.
It's not Bueller versus Kimona Wanalea, which by
yes.
the way, God, what a wonderful fucking name. Which, by the way, I really do love Kimona. They could have did that here. Kimona's still hot in 2006. That could have worked.
Yeah, that's true. Lita takes the Death Valley Driver, and then Dreamer celebrates with Beulah instead of pitting her, and then Edge takes him out with barbed wire and spears Beulah and covers her in a very interesting way and gets the win. One,
two, three. It's a fucking great match.
Yeah, it rules.
Yeah. It's a good match. There's few moments on this card that really hits the beats of ECW. Mm-hmm. And you just had to have a guy like Mick Foley and guys like Mick Foley, Terry Funk, and Tommy Dreamer who understood that crowd, who understood what to do. You have someone like Edge who is so versatile. And I don't think Edge really gets the credit in that. Mm-hmm. In his wrestling mind and his ability to work different styles of matches, and he just fit in like a glove. Like, it's a great match. It really is like the best match of the night. And like I said, there's certain points within this pay-per-view where the heartbeats actually hit. And like I said, it's not a good pay-per-view, but this is one of the highlights of it. And, you know, still good to go back and watch. If you watch anything on this card, this is probably the match you want to watch.
Yeah. After that, you know, Eugene comes out and does his thing and ends up getting caned by Sandman.
Fucking stupid.
Yeah. No reason for it, really. You had to get
Sandman on the card.
Mm-hmm. Then we get another unannounced match where Balls Mahoney takes on Masato Tanaka.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was kind of short. It ended with Balls just fucking lighting him up with a chair.
Right. This is very painful, and I don't suggest that, you know, anyone, you know, do this match. But like, this is also one of those few ECW heartbeat matches because it's just chair shots and gore, and it's two dudes who are meant for that, in Balls Mahoney and then Masato Tanaka, who you can't say a bad word about Masato Tanaka for me.
That dude's he's very good. Awesome. I love the match with Mike Awesome. This one was not as good, obviously, but
of course not, but
fine.
Yeah.
Then it's time for our main event. RVD against John Cena for the WWE Championship. We get the "If Cena wins, we riot" sign, which has become iconic. Cena throws his shirt into the crowd multiple times. They throw it back each time. And then the actual match starts, and I realize that what everyone remembers is how the crowd was, because the actual match is not good.
Nah.
But
at the same time, though, it's like... We say the same thing about Hogan Rock.
That's true.
And the fact that, and granted, the crowd was shit in every most points leading up to this match. I look at the crowd here, and it's a split between the hatred of WWE and really Cena and what kind of Cena represents at the time, and the complete adoration for RVD.
Mm-hmm.
And it matters really because RVD is ECW. RVD is the greatest wrestler in ECW history. There's no one in popularity that compares to Rob Van Dam. And he didn't get that moment last year. Matter of fact, he's never had a moment to even sniff that belt. I don't think we've said Rob Van Dam championship match in at least 3 years.
Yeah, so, I think the Triple H stuff was the last one. That was 2003, so yeah.
Right, 2002 going into 2003. Maybe had just a title match on a Raw at some point, but, you know.
No, I don't think he ever did.
Right.
He never did. He never got up to that height again.
Right, so, like, the passion truly was there to see RVD win that chip, and it just so happened that it's a dude in the ring that we already don't like anyway. But I also think, like, that made for such magic, especially from Cena's point, because it's the most visceral up until that point reaction that he could get. And if John Cena doesn't have that reaction, are we necessarily looking at the next 6, 7, 8 years of Cena's career the same way? I think that was an important moment for him.
Yeah.
And how, like, obviously, like, he doesn't feel like he's responding to it well or whatever, but it's such an important moment for the career of John Cena, you know, that, that the crowd here really enhances the match. While the match is shit, you got to look at it the same way as you do Rock versus Hogan, is that the crowd really makes this match what it is.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously, eventually Edge comes out and spears Cena through the table with the helmet on and all that. And that's cool, you know.
Thank you, Edge. That's, again, they only cared about RVD winning. It was RVD win or bust. I don't care if granted, Edge impressed earlier in the night, so he probably like, yo, thank you. But, like, for real. Just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, the finish was kind of weird because Heyman counted, and I don't think they thought that, like, it was a valid count or whatever until the bell rang.
I'd say, yeah, it definitely was not a valid count. But Cena could have protested.
They got there, and unfortunately, we won't see a lot of RVD with the title. But, you know, that was one night stand, and it was not as good as the first one. But there are a couple matches worth watching, I guess. And yeah.
I would say it's a tale of two halves. If you watch the back half, the only shitty thing you're really seeing is, I mean, yeah, the title match is not a good in-ring match, but the really shitty, only shitty thing you're seeing is Eugene getting caned by Sandman.
Yeah.
You can virtually skip everything up until the 3-on-3.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. Just real quick, I do have the ECW roster that we'll be looking at. You'll start next week. We've got Al Snow, Balls Mahoney, Big Show, Danny Doring, Jason Knight, Jazz, Just Incredible, Kelly Kelly, Kevin Thorne, Kurt Angle, Nunzio, Masato Tanaka, Mikey Whipwreck, Roadkill, RVD, Sabu, Sandman, Stevie Richards, Tajiri, Terry Funk.
Why sign all these people?
Tommy Dreamer, Tony Mamaluke, and Trinity. So again, not a lot there. They'll add a couple folks. Mike Knox is coming. CM Punk is coming, obviously.
But it's just someone they need to sign Danny Doring. They need to sign Roadkill. They just signed these people because they were old ECW names. And if you weren't going to have them off touring on their own in the bingo halls or the small arenas, what use were they?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that was the start of wasting, like, the bloated talent roster, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. King of the Ring's easy. It's RVD.
Yes.
We'll be back in a bit to talk about the post, and really it's probably just the 2 weeks that RVD's champion, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
We have some finals to watch, so do this quick. I'm at Cameron Santo. Rob's at Robert O'Neill 31. Chris is at Chris M. Novak. At Barbara Chernette on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you guys for joining us for another wonderful edition of Ruthless Aggression. We'll see you guys later. Take it easy.